It is now time for our featured guest, our featured presentation, where we amplify the voices in and around the community. It is time for Mic Check. Our mic check presentation this morning, Anthony, it is taken from The Ward Post. The Ward Post takes an in-depth look at U.S.-Jamaican relations, then and now and in between. From The Ward Post this morning, we have the privilege and the honor, Anthony Turner, to have Ambassador Professor Curtis Ward. Please introduce our guest, Anthony.
Well, our special guest on Mic Check this morning, he's certainly no stranger to grooving radio. He's Attorney Curtis Ward, a former ambassador of Jamaica to the United Nations with special responsibility for security, council affairs. And Ambassador Ward served as expert advisor and liaison with regional and international organizations at UN Counterterrorism Committee, where he developed and led the CTC Global Counterterrorism Technical Assistance Capacity Building Program. And Ambassador Ward is an adjunct professor, Homeland Security Graduate Program, University of the District of Columbia, and a former adjunct lecturer at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs. So we welcome Attorney Curtis Ward to Groovin' Radio again, once again.
Professor Ambassador Curtis Ward, welcome to Groovin' Radio, my friend. How are you?
I am great, and thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being in conversation with this team, this eminent team of... I don't want to call you radio journalists. You guys are journalists.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. It is always a pleasure to have these conversations with you, Ambassador Curtis Ward. And what a great timing for this one, because I posed the question, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, is there a diplomatic rift between Jamaica and the United States? And here it is, the Ward Post, presented by Ambassador and Professor Curtis Ward. You have taken an in-depth look at U.S. Jamaica's relations, then, now, and in between. As we dig into the Ward Post this morning, Ambassador Curtis Ward, what is that relations like these days?
Well, you know, it is puzzling. Because, as you know, the Biden administration has been very active in terms of its programming for Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean, and very important programs. In addition to continuation of programs started under the Obama administration, such as the Caribbean Basin Security Initiative and the Caribbean Energy Security Initiative. In addition to those programs, they launched some additional and renewed programs during the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles last year, dealing with food security, dealing, you know, with energy security, and so on and so forth. And they are putting money in it, and therefore the relations. The USAID budget restored levels that it was during the Obama era, and which were cut drastically during the Trump presidency. So there are a lot of things going on. During COVID, Jamaica received a tremendous amount of help from the United States in terms of equipment and vaccinations and so on and so forth. So the relationship has been strong. And as you also know, the vice president, Stephen Roots, her father is Jamaican, and the current ambassador to Jamaica from the United States is also a Jamaican, born in Jamaica, a graduate of Jamaican high school. So the connections in this administration are strong. Susan Rice, who just left the administration, it also touted her Jamaican roots.
Indeed.
And so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
In the Justice Department, we saw Assistant Attorney General Clark, also of Jamaican heritage.
Mm.
So this administration has been strong on Jamaica and the Caribbean. And when this brouhaha occurred recently, it kind of shocked everybody that it was such a public affair rather than something that would have been handled in a discreet and diplomatic manner.
Now, Ambassador, you mentioned changes with the relations under the Trump administration. What happened in those 4 years when Donald Trump was president? What kind of relations did the U.S. have with Jamaica?
Well, first of all, the first budget proposal by Donald Trump's presidency was to cut the USAID budget by 30% across the board. Several of the programs that were undergoing and being funded under a higher budget appropriation bill were cut. Many of them had to be shut down. And only a few of those programs continued. Furthermore, if you wanted any kind of benefit from Donald Trump's presidency, from his administration, you had to subscribe to the idea that America first.
Wow.
Remember that?
Uh-huh.
America first. And you had to go along with Trump's policy in order to be in Trump's favor.
Wow.
And that is where Jamaica found itself. The Jamaican government did the bidding of the Trump administration. And I dare anyone in the government to dispute that, because the facts are real. This is what happened. We saw Jamaica abandoning its core principles in international affairs.
Wow.
At the UN, we abandoned the Palestinian cause. We abandoned the Sahrawi people's cause against Morocco. And on and on and on. Why? Because guess what? Trump's ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, made it very clear. You don't support Trump's policies on the international stage, then we are watching you, blah, blah, blah. So the Jamaican government lacked the backbone to stand up to Trump. We did whatever Trump wanted in the hemisphere with Venezuela and so on and so forth. We rushed to expropriate Venezuela's interest in Petrojam. We got cut off from Petrocaribe. Why? Because Trump wanted it that way. And don't forget that picture of indignity of Caribbean leaders sitting in the passageway at Mar-a-Lago waiting to see Trump.
Wow.
People have short memories, Rush.
Indeed.
But I don't. I don't.
Anthony.
Yeah. Professor Ward, when I think about, and when most people think about diplomatic relations between both the U.S. and Jamaica, most people think about what the U.S. does for Jamaica. We hear about aid, how much aid, and all kind of different programs that benefit Jamaica. If we go back to the 60s, 70s, during the Cold War, we you know, heard about, you know, Jamaica's strategic position. And so there was some benefit for the U.S. back then. Can you outline for the benefit of our listeners how it benefits the U.S. in this diplomatic relations?
Well, look, first of all, the Caribbean as a whole with Jamaica in the leadership of the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
and the largest of the, in terms of population and influence, of the CARICOM member states, other than Haiti, whose population is three times that of Jamaica, or almost four times. But the point is, Jamaica has always had a pivotal role in U.S.-Jamaica-Caribbean relations. The Caribbean was designated in 2004 by President George W. Bush
mm-hmm.
as America's third border. And if you go back, and I've written about this too, but if one should go back and look at the declaration from that summit of the Americas where this was done,
mm-hmm.
You will see the strategic interest of the United States in the Caribbean and the beneficial relationship that they signed on to with the United States. The Caribbean government and the United States had a joint declaration, and that third border initiative included security for the Caribbean. It included drug interdiction, which has been a plague on Caribbean countries
mm-hmm.
in terms of driving crime and insecurity. And since 2004, that has been a focus. As a matter of fact, during the Bush presidency, we had the Ship Rider Agreement, where U.S. Coast Guard would patrol, and U.S. Southern Command would patrol the Caribbean to interdict drug traffickers and other contraband being shipped through the Caribbean. But in order for arrests to take place, a Jamaican police officer had to be on board those Coast Guard vessels. And that's what the Ship Rider Agreement was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wouldn't have authority to arrest anyone within Jamaican territorial waters.
Mm-hmm.
But by having the police officer, while they can detain, it is the police officer who makes the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Indeed.
Because of Jamaica's our Jamaica Coast Guard officer
mm-hmm.
with arrest powers. So but the drug trafficking from South America coming through Jamaica and other Caribbean countries to the US mainland and to Europe is extraordinary. Furthermore, Jamaica sits astride the Panama Canal. And that's a strategic waterway
mm-hmm.
for the transshipment of goods from Asia and other parts of the eastern side of the United States and so on to the eastern seaboard of America.
Indeed. Indeed.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm.
And right now, only a few U.S. ports can handle the super ships, the super tankers, coming through the Panama Canal now from Asia. Only a few, Jamaican Kingston Port, can do that.
Indeed.
And so the Jamaican port is what we call a certified port for transshipment. Meaning when those super tankers come into Kingston,
mm-hmm.
they can break them down into smaller tankers for shipment all the way up the eastern seaboard.
Indeed.
Not just to large ports like Jacksonville and so on.
Yeah.
A CSI port was something that was introduced under George Bush following 9/11 to make it possible for U.S. Customs to be embedded in Jamaican customs and other customs around the world for pre-inspection of cargo ships coming from these ports into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, only three such ports. Well, actually four, because Panama has two.
And Singapore.
But only No, no, I'm talking about in the Caribbean. Panama has two. Dominican Republic has one at Sausalito.
Mm-hmm.
And Kingston has one at the port.
Indeed. Indeed.
All shipments coming from other Caribbean countries to the U.S. have to go through one of those ports.
Mm.
That's why Jamaica's ports have been so successful. Because under P.J. Patterson's government, a major investment was made to make the Kingston port qualify. You know?
Indeed.
So, but part of the problem we have, you know, Russian Anthony,
mm-hmm.
is that people see today, don't know where it's coming from. They don't know how we got here.
Mm.
And they have no clue as to the projection of what our behavior today can do for tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I try my very best to elucidate on some of those issues.
Indeed. One second, Ambassador. Program note, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, where we amplify the voices of importance. And this morning, one of those voices is a former ambassador from Jamaica to the United Nations, Professor Curtis Ward, and this morning's program is taken from the Ward Post as we take an in-depth look at U.S.-Jamaica's relations. Now, you know, after 61 years, Ambassador, after 61 years, we can call it independent, we can call it nationhood, as a sovereign country. Do you think Jamaica has really benefited immensely from this relationship with the United States? Because it is often said that when the U.S. has an interest, and that word interest, it is often said that when the United States have an interest in a particular place, we must pay very close attention. You know, you mentioned some real good stuff in there. You talk about George W. Bush, and we can talk about Caribbean Heritage Month and how it came together on within the Bush administration and stuff like that. But have we really benefited immensely from this relationship, Ambassador?
The answer is yes.
Mm.
And let me tell you why I say that. Jamaica's military
mm-hmm.
would not be where it is now without the support of the United States,
mm-hmm.
including equipment and training. Jamaica's Coast Guard would not be what it is today to patrol and protect Jamaica's porous maritime borders.
Mm-hmm.
The Jamaica JDF police force, the judiciary have all benefited tremendously
mm-hmm.
from American capacity building, equipment, and training.
Mm-hmm.
The education system, many of the programs, USAID funded, many USAID programs affect early childhood education
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. USAID programs in the health sector, Jamaica's health sector would probably collapse without the help of U.S. assistance. Now, saying all of that, mm-hmm. our energy sector, the whole infusion, LNG, as one of the alternatives to oil, and a cheaper and cleaner fuel than oil, is as a result of Obama's Caribbean Energy Security Initiative,
mm-hmm.
which created an environment for American investors.
Mm-hmm.
In the energy sector,
mm-hmm.
the increase in wind and solar energy in Jamaica is as a result of CESI.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jamaica has benefited tremendously. Jamaica, but I'm not saying all of this to suggest
mm-hmm.
that the U.S. doesn't benefit, because a stable Jamaica that the U.S. can collaborate with to help protect America's southern border, which is the Caribbean Sea.
But
Jamaica, that is at risk.
Indeed. But with all that said, though, Ambassador, then why are we why is Jamaica still having all these issues? You mention healthcare, you mention education, and in between there, you mention, you know, the Jamaica Defense Force and the Jamaica Constabulary Force and stuff like that. But we still seem to be a country with all these issues. And then when we look at the assistance and the aid that's been given through a lot of these medical missions from the United States, privately owned and funded from the United States to Jamaica, it still makes us wonder, with this, with the close proximity, Anthony, mm-hmm. and all what has been done, it seems as if every so often this relationship, it goes up and down. And I say this now, Professor, for you to put on your thinking cap for when we come back after the break. You look when Ambassador Bridgewater, under the Obama administration, from here to Jamaica, you look at the relationship then, and then you look at how the relationship changed when Donald Tapia was the ambassador from the United States to Jamaica. And now we have a Jamaican, a born Jamaican, who's the ambassador from the United States to Jamaica. And he has gone, I think, in my opinion, a bit quiet. It makes you think. So I just want you to put on your thinking cap there, Ambassador, and take a look at when Pamela Bridgewater was ambassador, when Donald Tapia was ambassador, and under the ambassadorship now of Mr. Nick Perry. What is the relationship under those three ambassador like when we come back? Anthony, you want to close out this segment? Anything?
Yeah,
you want to
one
say?
Thing that I also would love the ambassador to talk about is, I mean, we've had migration, mass migration from Jamaica from way back when. Mm-hmm. And if you look at our educational system, we spend a lot of money to train our students from elementary, primary, high school, even collegiate level. And then at that stage, they leave and migrate here. How can we leverage all of that to say that, to benefit us? So if we're going to be providing training for our students, how can we leverage that to get something in return?
2 minutes, Ambassador. 2 minutes to close the segment.
Well, you guys asked so many questions. I think we need a whole lot more than 2 minutes.
No, just to close out this part of the segment.
Well, I think when we come back, we can break it down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But Jamaica also gets assistance from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jamaica is one of their favorite beneficiaries,
mm-hmm.
coming out of the Scandinavian countries and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they can only combined contribute a certain percentage of the needs.
Yeah.
The rest has to come out of Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I will come back and look. But why is it, how is it possible?
Mm-hmm.
It is not just because we in the diaspora want to help, while our medical missions and our education assistance and so on. It is because American laws permit us to raise tax-exempt money.
Mm-hmm.
That we can spend.
Great point.
To sustain these missions.
Great point.
To assist our schools and so on and so forth.
Great
so
point.
It's quite a complex weave of issues that bring it all together.
Indeed. All that point, Ambassador. And when we come back also, we want to close out this morning, because we want to close out on the fragility of democracy. Because if you look around the world, Ambassador, if you look around the world, and we don't have to look too far, just look right here in these United States, and we can see how fragile, how fractured, democracy is. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to
Peace, and this is the original Chronics representing, and I say, you're listening to Groovin' Radio with the original Rasclem on 93.5 WVIP FM. Keep it grooving, and we will keep it moving all the time, every time. Ease out.
And Thank you so much, Chronix, for bringing us up at the top of this 11 o'clock hour, the final 25 minutes of the Grooving Radio's Experience presentation this Saturday morning. We are in our featured segment, Mic Check, where we amplify the voices of importance around here, ladies and gentlemen. And one of those voices this morning is no stranger to Grooving Radio. He is the former ambassador from Jamaica to the United Nations, Professor Curtis Ward. He has joined us. We have taken the program this morning from the Ward Post, an in-depth look at the Jamaica-U.S. relations. Anthony Turner, our writer, is also a part of the conversation. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Yeah.
Before we took the break, Professor, I asked you to put on your professor cap this morning because, briefly, I want you to look what kind of relationship we had under Ambassador Pamela Bridgewater under the Obama administration. And then you go over to Donald Tapia under the Trump administration. And then now we have an ambassador, Mr. Nick Perry, who's a Jamaican, born Jamaican, who's now the ambassador from the United States to Jamaica. Juxtapose that, because it seems as if, Professor, you know, these relationships tend to go up, or it's on a seesaw at times, huh?
Well, you know, it's a very good question, because we must also recognize that the ambassadors represent the policies of the administration, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And under Ambassador Bridgewater, President Obama had a very progressive policy to Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Port of Spain in Trinidad, at the summit of the Americas, where he announced the Caribbean Basin Security Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
From President Obama, one of the most contentious issues between the U.S. and the region was with Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And President Obama, before he left office, established diplomatic relations with Cuba,
mm-hmm.
which reduced a lot of the tensions.
Mm-hmm.
But under Ambassador Bridgewater was quite familiar with Jamaica, although she was an American, African-American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she taught at a university in Baltimore, where many Jamaicans attend, and many have returned to Jamaica, including when she got there, one of the ministers of government was one of her students.
Wow.
Before she left here. You know, so the connections under President Obama, and we shouldn't forget President Obama's trip to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the relationship could not be any closer. The Obama administration helped us with our IMF programming to bring Jamaica out of the recession and become a beacon of financial responsibility around the world. You know, without the help of the Obama administration, the Portia Simpson government and Finance Minister Peter Phillips could not have done it. So those are some of the things we have to remember. But when Ambassador Tapia came in, he came there representing America First policy. And everything has been damned. So we shouldn't forget that. And he was reflecting what was in the White House and the State Department. He was representing Pompeo, Secretary of State, and before him, Rex Tillerson. And who are these people? How do they see a country like Jamaica? When they visited Jamaica, what did they go there to do? You think they go there to be in love with Jamaica? No.
Mm.
They went there to oppose China's influence on Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
That was their plan. That was what they went there for.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jamaica to go against Maduro in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
For Jamaica not to open its mouth when Trump rolled back Cuban rapprochement,
mm-hmm.
and reversed Obama's policy in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they went there for, to pressure Jamaican government and to say to the Jamaican government, look, you go along with our program or you don't get anything from us.
Wow.
So we were up for sale. We sold. But our core principles, our moral values went with that. Then now we fast forward to the current ambassador, a Jamaican, yes. But he's also there to represent the Biden administration. He's been there now for a year. And quite frankly, I believe he's handling it properly. You mentioned he's silent. He can best be effective by being silent. I think he can represent the U.S. and help Jamaica by not coming out and be rambunctious or speaking out on troubling issues. He should work behind the scenes, one-on-one with the Jamaican Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, one-on-one with his colleagues in the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
He can be most effective being silent and using the diplomatic tools at his disposal. So don't knock him for being silent.
Well, you know,
my view is it can be more effective that way.
Indeed. But, you know, the reason why I brought up the silence as a Jamaican and the recent, I don't want to call it a rift, but the recent development with the relationship between Jamaica and the United States over a U.S. diplomat, we haven't heard a word from our ambassador. And it's kind of troubling, Ambassador Ward. It's troubling to me and many other Jamaicans knowing where Jamaica stands. Yes, a silence can be very important, but there are times when you have to break that silence. It was Martin Luther King who said, "In the end, we will not remember the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends." In this situation, Ambassador Ward, do you think Ambassador Nick Perry should have said something?
The embassy put out a statement to tamp down on the level of differences between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
But he cannot come out and say, "I am with Jamaica on this."
Mm.
He'll be recalled to Washington, and that will be the end of his service to Jamaica.
Wow.
He cannot come out and say Jamaica is wrong.
Mm.
Because that's the viewpoint of the State Department, which he represents.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't say that.
Mm-hmm.
So his best thing was to have someone in his embassy put out a statement, which is reflective of the embassy's position. Without being loud. Do you understand me?
Mm-hmm.
So he can work best behind the scenes to reduce the tension between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be an effective diplomat. And I know he is not trained in diplomatic statecraft.
Indeed.
Learning on the job.
Indeed.
But the point is, you cannot be an effective diplomat if you're a loudmouth diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Indeed, indeed.
And what his job is right now is to ensure that Jamaica doesn't get punished for anything.
Indeed.
That's how best he served Jamaica.
Mm.
And he can make that case for us.
Indeed.
If he doesn't come out and alienate who are his bosses.
Indeed.
In the State Department.
Yep.
So that is how I see that.
Going forward,
he will have a higher profile. But remember, he's only in the job a year.
He's in a very peculiar position, Ambassador. And we're gonna leave that one. We're gonna leave that one there because I want to end on this note, Anthony. Mm. I want to end on when we look at democracy, Professor Curtis Ward.
Can you hold that for a moment? Because I need to respond to Anthony's...
Yes, go ahead.
...question in the last segment, where he talked about the brain drain from Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it is not really a brain drain. It's a brain gain. because the people who leave Jamaica, the majority of them, come here and attend university and achieve a different level, what I call brain gain. And they don't have to return to Jamaica to help Jamaica. You spoke earlier of the medical missions, the education of the alumni groups, the input from them. If they didn't come here from those high schools in Jamaica and gain a college education or a good job where they can give back to Jamaica, then, you know, Jamaica would be worse off for it. The medical doctors and the nurses, they didn't come here as medical doctors and nurses. They came here from high school. A few of them may have been trained in Jamaica, but most came here from high school and worked hard in this country to gain what they have gained, and they are giving back. Many, I mentioned that they benefit from the non-profit status.
Indeed.
That bought them up.
Indeed.
But many of them put their own treasure and their resources into their missions. So we have to recognize that. So it's not really a brain drain. Although Jamaica is one of the countries with the most people in the diaspora, percentage-wise, who have college degrees and higher.
Indeed.
Jamaica.
Indeed.
Is way up there.
You know,
the diaspora has been maintained in Jamaica.
You know, Professor, I've always said that, do you know? I've always said it's not a brain drain because we live in a bordering world. And what happened if the grass is greener across the other border, we're going to go there. So I will concur with you on that one, that it's not a brain drain. Let's wrap this morning's conversation, Professor, on democracy, because when we look at what took place on January 6th in Washington, D.C., and we look at the former President Donald Trump, who has been indicted here in New York, who has been indicted in Florida, who has been indicted in Washington, D.C., Special Counsel Jack Smith, and there's more indictments seems to be coming out of Georgia. We look at what's happening in Russia. We look at what's happening in Israel. The fragility of democracy. How fragile is democracy, Professor Curtis Ward?
Very, very fragile. Democracy will not survive unless we, the people, work to keep democracy alive. Because Donald Trump taught us a big lesson. And you saw my latest article, Trump's Gift to Democracy. And the reason why I gave it that title is a little bit provocative. But if we really dig down deep, if Trump hadn't done what he did in the last 4 years, we wouldn't be discussing democracy today. We wouldn't be recognizing the fragility of democracy. We wouldn't be recognizing the importance of we the people standing up for democracy and advocating for democracy and warning against erosion of democracy in the United States and in Jamaica and across the Caribbean. We wouldn't be talking about authoritarianism and autocracy because we were comfortable in the belief that democracy, which we hold sacrosanct, was safe and sound. But one man who has managed to garner the support of a minimum of 35% of American voters, with over 70 million voting for him to have a second term, we must recognize the fragility. One of the focuses of the Biden administration when he took office was democracy. And don't forget, he had a summit on democracy. And that is one of the paramount issues
everything the Biden administration has been doing abroad, the protection and promotion of democracy. Because under democracy, Russ and Anthony, we enjoy certain freedoms.
We do, yeah.
You can't open your mouth. You can't have an independent radio program.
Mm-hmm.
Or in China, or any authoritarian ruled country. You don't have freedom of the press. You don't have freedom of speech. You don't have freedom of assembly. You don't have protection of human rights. Even though human rights are violated in the United States,
mm-hmm.
we have recourse to the court of law. And the rule of law is one of the core principles of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we take all these things for granted. But if we lose democracy, we lose all of them.
Indeed. So the battle for democracy continues. You know, Ambassador, some of us were paying attention, you know. We were warned. Yeah. And we were warned by Malcolm X. Malcolm Little, yeah. a.k.a. Malcolm yeah. X. There's something yeah. that he always said about democracy. And he always said that democracy is like hypocrisy. And we should pay attention. As Marcus Garvey gets set to celebrate, as we get set to celebrate Marcus Mosiah Garvey's birthday this coming week, he was born on August 17th. Remember these words? Sung by Robert Nesta Marley. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Have no fear for atomic energy. Huh? Remember those words, Ambassador mm-hmm. Curtis Ward? They're ringing loud today, huh? Because only we can emancipate ourselves, huh?
That's right. That's what Marcus Garvey said, that we must do that.
Mm.
And let me jump in here.
Real quick.
as you celebrate Marcus Garvey's birthday,
mm-hmm.
I want to take this opportunity,
mm-hmm.
first of all, to congratulate you.
Thank you, sir.
On your honors, which you will receive in October. But I also want the world to know that I want to express my love and affection to my dear wife, who will celebrate with me on Marcus Garvey's birthday, August 17th,
uh-huh.
49 years of marriage.
Indeed.
That's my anniversary also. So when you mentioned Marcus Garvey's birthday, I could not resist the opportunity to mention our anniversary.
49 years of togetherness. 49 years of growing together. Congratulations and happy birthday. A happy celebration. Happy anniversary to Ambassador, you and your lovely wife. And, you know, it's funny because August 16th, Anthony, the Empress Andrea celebrates her birthday. And, you know, here's it. Ambassador is telling me that the 17th of August is celebrating 49 years. There must be a lot of love there, Ambassador. Because 49... listen, you are a very busy man, you know, Ambassador. And for your wife to keep up with your busyness over the last 49 years, man, it's indeed God's blessing, what? Ambassador.
She certifies me.
Yes, indeed.
And give me permission to serve.
So we thank you. We thank you as always, Ambassador. We're going to have to leave it here. We thank you so much as we, you know, these conversations, Ambassador, we must have. We must have these conversations. They're very, very necessary. And for those who don't know, I hope that we're getting them in the known, in the know of things, because it is our purpose to really elevate and uplift not just the community, not just the city of New York, but our entire country of Jamaica. And for those who know better, like yourself, Ambassador, you know, we strive on doing better, huh?
Encourage them to read the Ward Post.
Indeed. And I just want...
Wardpost.com.
Yeah, the Ward Post. You know? And also the podcast, Real Talk with Ambassador.
Real Talk with Ambassador.
With Ambassador Ward, Curtis Ward. Thank you as always. And I must say to you and Anthony, I am honored and I am humbled when I got the call from the Prime Minister's office that I will be given national awards this year. You know, we didn't set out to do this program to be honored, but as a team, and I take this one for the team because it's a team effort, and it started with Caribbean Lifestyle TV, Anthony Turner, Andrea Bullins, and myself. We produced and host that television program for 5.5 years, and we transitioned into radio, and hence 13 official years after starting Grooving Radio for the government. Thank you, sir, for the government of Jamaica to see it fit to give me some kind of national awards. I will humbly accept it, and I will rear it with pride. Thank you very much, Ambassador Curtis Ward.
You're always welcome.
Indeed.
Always welcome. You're an ambassador.
All right, Ambassador.
Take care. One love, Ambassador. We'll talk soon. Ladies and gentlemen, okay. We have come to... Take care, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our presentation this Saturday morning. Thank you so much, Anthony. We'll talk later on today.
Yeah, man, have a safe trip.
Indeed.
All the best.
Indeed, one love. Grooving Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume and Christopher Roberts. Grooving Radio was hosted by Ras Clem. Contributing to our presentation this Saturday morning, musically we had the music of Luciana and Third World. They're coming to Westchester County Center on Saturday, September 2nd. In our community engagement segment, we had the privilege once again to engage another nonprofit group, the Jajere Inc. Founder James Ains joined us. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now with Mr. Joe Von Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for Entertainment Report, and he provided the bio for our very special guest, Mic Check guest this Saturday morning, Ambassador Professor Curtis Ward. Waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. Irie Jam comes in at 1, Link Up at 6.